He made the mistake of using some of the language of the opposition, the idea of the idea of mental distress or feeling blue.
You said that the kind of statement that he made really feeds into the wingnut argument, your words, that women have abortions because they are frivolous about that decision, because we're having a bad hair day.
That's NBC correspondent Andrea Mitchell talking with Kim Gandy, the president of the National Organization for Women, recently about Barack Obama's statements. And they caused some stir, not so much generally with the public, but certainly with the pro-choice community. He seemed to be backing off a little bit on a real firm pro-choice stance. And Kim Gandy's a little concerned that he was using a kind of language reserved for the opposition about a woman's health, that old famous health exception for the women. We're going to be listening to this entire interview with Kim Gandy and getting your reaction. I'll have some thoughts on it as well here in the first part of Issues Etc. is second hour today. Now, in the next segment of Issues Etc., we're going to be talking with Dr. Stephen Hine, a very basic distinction that I think many Christians fail to see. There are two theologies in the world. One is a theology of glory, which sounds good, doesn't it? I mean, the Bible talks about glory. But it is, in fact, the fallen theology of fallen man. All religions, save Christianity, are, at their heart, theologies of glory. Trying to gauge how God is disposed toward you by your circumstances in life. That's a theology of glory. Then there is the theology of Holy Scripture, which is the theology of the cross. Wherein God acts in hidden and strange ways, like suffering and death, even suffering death of his son, in order to reveal himself and save man. We're going to contrast those two theologies coming up here in about 10 minutes on Issues Etc. Now, you can join us for the next hour, 1-877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-MY-IE, or email us right here in the studio. We're coming to you live this Wednesday, July the 30th, talkback@issuesetc.org. talkback@issuesetc.org. This comes from NBC. Andrea Mitchell was interviewing Kim Gandy of the National Organization for Women, and they were deeply concerned about some of the things that Barack Obama had said recently with regard to abortion rights.
When it comes to abortion rights, John McCain and Barack Obama have taken opposite points of view. Senator McCain, of course, wants to overturn Roe v. Wade. Senator Obama supports that landmark ruling governing abortion rights in this country. But on some of the details, well, not so much, particularly late-term abortion. Some reproductive rights groups are asking Obama to clarify his position. Kim Gandy is the president of the National Organization for Women. Welcome, Kim. Thanks for joining us here today. There are a couple of things that he has said about late-term abortions that led, there was an evolving position that sort of led some groups to have some concerns. He gave an interview to a Christian magazine, and I think it was called Relevant Magazine. It was July 1st, and it drew a very strong response from some women's groups. Here's part of that interview. Quote, "I have repeatedly said that I think it is entirely appropriate for states to restrict or even prohibit late-term abortions as long as there is a strict, well-defined exception for the health of the mother. Now, I don't think that mental distress qualifies as health of the mother." Well, then he later tried to clarify that and talked about mental health. And I think you had a quote about that, if I can find it. What you said about that was that you did not think that suggesting a well-defined exception for mental health qualifies as health of the mother. Did you have problems, rather, with what he said about late-term abortions and whether or not the mental health exception should be incorporated in that?
Well, certainly we were concerned about his the way that he was initially quoted from that interview.
Did you get him to clarify it?
Absolutely. He did clarify it. I've since then had a conversation with him, and he's met with women's rights organizations and clarified that although he does, in fact, oppose late-term abortions with the exception of the woman's physical and mental health, that, in fact, is the law in all 50 states in the country.
Okay, now, this is the first thing we need to respond to in this notion. Now, it's hidden there, so please, you got to listen carefully. This notion that late-term abortions, that is, abortions performed late in the pregnancy, are somehow substantively different than early-term abortions. abortions performed early in the pregnancy. This, I would point out, first of all, the thing you need to understand is that Roe v. Wade puts no limit whatsoever on abortions, regardless of when or how they are performed throughout all 9 months of pregnancy. It's a common myth about Roe v. Wade that this landmark legislation, not legislation, what am I saying, landmark court decision somehow gave free rein for early-term abortions, but was a little more iffy on late-term abortions. Not true. Roe v. Wade permits and keeps legal abortion at all stages of pregnancy. It did set up a trimester system, but it did not restrict abortion during any of those trimesters. That's what you need to understand. But this idea, which is kind of presumed in Barack Obama's comments and Kim Gandhi's reaction, that late-term abortions are somehow substantively different than early-term abortions, is bogus. Abortion is abortion regardless of when it is carried out. Whether it is done in the first 10 weeks or in the ninth month. Abortion is abortion. Now, this isn't something that the pro-choice community wants you to recognize, because they want to be able to say, okay, yeah, fine. Some pro-choicers can be against these late-term abortions because they're so gruesome, all the way out to partial birth abortion. But who could possibly, what reasonable person could possibly be against an early-term abortion where perhaps the child is so small as to be almost unnoticeable? But there is no difference between the late-term and the early-term abortions. To concede that is to concede an awful lot to the pro-choice community.
So he's entirely consistent with what the law is now. And in fact, I think he made the mistake of using some of the language of the opposition, the idea of mental distress or feeling blue.
You said that the kind of statement that he made, that kind of statement really feeds into the wingnut argument, your words, that women have abortions because they are frivolous about that decision, because we're having a bad hair day, said you. There seems to be an information gap there. Were you able to fill that information gap when you sat down with him or talked to him? I don't know whether it was face to face or not.
I think that, in fact, what he did was simply not be clear about his position. He certainly has a long-standing record of support for women's reproductive rights, and I didn't think that he was actually saying that he thought women just had abortions because they were feeling blue, especially late-term abortions, but the fact that he used the language of the opposition fed into that argument.
Okay, here's the other thing we need to say in light of what Kim Gandhi is laying out before us. Language is important. Now, this is something that even Kim Gandhi understands. The language we use regarding abortion is important. And it is important whether you say something like the health of a mother or the mental health of a mother. Because all of us know, everyone in the pro-life community understands, that this health exception is a loophole through which one could drive a train. If it does include something like mental anguish, let's just say for the sake of argument, mere mental anguish, like, oh, I might have to put my career on hold. Or what will my boyfriend think, or my husband think, or my mother? If that becomes part of the health of the mother, then, of course, one can conceive of no circumstance in which the merest concern, even the most frivolous concern, could be labeled the health of the mother. So language is important. When we say health of the mother, what do we mean? This is something that is not well defined in American jurisprudence, especially with regard to abortion. And maybe we need to define it. I can guarantee you one thing. The pro-choice community will resist hammer and tong, tooth and nail, any fine definition, even the most basic definition of the health of the mother. Oh, by the way, for me to use the phrase health of the mother would deeply offend the pro-choice community, because you're not a mother until you choose to be. It doesn't make any difference whether you're pregnant. You're not a mother. They'll talk about the health of the woman, which is why the pro-life community, if you want to talk about the health issue with regard to abortion, you keep using the word mother. Because a pregnant woman is a mother. She's a mother from the time the child is conceived. That is not philosophy. That is not metaphysics. That is not theology. That's not an article of faith. That's a fact. That's science. When a woman conceives in her womb, she is from that point on a mother. By the way, even if she aborts her child, she remains a mother. When we come back from this break, a little bit more of this audio from NBC, and then we'll be taking up the conversation with Dr. Stephen Hine on the theology of the cross versus the theology of glory. You can join us 1-877-623-MY-IE. We're coming to you live this Wednesday, the 30th of July, 877-623-MY-IE, or talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. I'll wrap up some of my thoughts on the other side of this break with regard to the women's movement and abortion, and how it could be that the two have become so tied together that women's rights have become quote-unquote reproductive rights. You know, it sounds to me, folks, that just in terms of its rhetoric, that reduces a woman to a womb. Women are more than their wombs, aren't they? So why is it that the essence of women's rights in America today is often boiled down to the issue of whether or not she can abort her child? We'll talk more about that on the other side of the break. I'm Todd Wilkins. Stay tuned. More Issues Etc. after this. 1-877-623-MY-IE. Talkback@issuesetc.org.
Sounds of rich liturgy and historic Christian worship. What a way to spend a Sunday morning. At Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstadt, Illinois, you'll find authentic Christianity as you hear the preaching of Christ crucified for the forgiveness of your sins. Come, join us Sunday mornings at 9 and Monday evenings at 7:30, and find out more about Trinity Lutheran Church, Millstadt, Illinois, at trinitymillstadt.org.
618-223-8384. It's the new phone number for the Issues Etc. listener comment line. 618-223-8384. Leery about calling a live radio talk show? Want to remain anonymous? Leave your recorded question or comment on the Issues Etc. comment line. 618-223-8384. The good, the bad, the ugly. We're big boys. We can take it. 618-223-8384.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
In the wake of Terri Schiavo's death, experts have been urging people to sign advance directives. The implication is that a legal document will be enough to protect you from a horrific death like Terri's. But most Americans would be shocked to learn that a living will is not necessarily enough. Even if you clearly specify that you do not want to be starved or dehydrated to death, most state laws do not require doctors and hospitals to give you the food and fluids that you've asked for. Even if you have filled out a legal document choosing food and water, many hospital ethics committees can say that your quality of life doesn't measure up to their standards, and you will be forced to slowly die against your will. It is important to sign an advance directive to make clear that you want food and water and medical treatment to save your life, but it is not enough. We must also work to change the laws so that those wishes will be respected. This has been a perspective on life from National Right to Life at www.nrlc.org.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., the Crusades. Oh my goodness, is this a misunderstood period in Christian and Islamic history? We'll talk about the Crusades with Dr. Thomas Madden of St. Louis University tomorrow on the program. Friday, Dr. Alvin Schmidt will join us from Illinois College. We'll talk about the influence of Christianity on Western civilization. I dare say no greater influence in Western civilization than the Christian church. We'll talk about it then Friday on the program. We're listening to an NBC interview between Andrea Mitchell and Kim Gandy, president of the National Organization for Women. Now, they're reacting to Barack Obama's latest statements on what he thinks he would be willing to think about as president with regard to restrictions on abortion. And many pro-choicers found those a bit of a retreat on his part for what they considered to be a strong pro-choice position. Well, I'm just using this opportunity to react to some of the embedded arguments that are made but not often acknowledged when we hear this kind of rhetoric from the pro-choice community. The next subject that they're going to take up here in just a minute has to do with the women's movement in general with regard to abortion.
And I think it's very important to use the right language when you're talking about something like mental health. Mental health is a serious issue, and mental health parity with physical health problems is something we've been fighting for in terms of universal health care and recognition that mental health issues are serious issues. They're not something to be glossed over, and he clearly understood that.
Is there still some suspicion of him among some people in the women's movement because of support, past support for Hillary Clinton, and perhaps some resentment over the way Clinton has been treated by him and by his people?
I don't sense any upset with the way that Senator Clinton has been treated by Senator Obama or his people, as you say, but very much with the way she was treated by the media, the enormous amount of sexism in the media that may have benefited her campaign in some ways because it did draw, I think, a lot of women to support her who maybe were on the fence.
And are you resigned to the fact that she's not going to be on the ticket since all signs are now pointing away from Hillary Clinton as a running mate?
Well, you know, day to day the news seems to change. I hadn't heard Tim Kaine as a front runner until yesterday, I guess, and suddenly everybody's talking about Tim Kaine. So I think it changes based on who he met with yesterday. If you look at the polls, the strongest running mate for Senator Obama would in fact be Senator Clinton.
He's
going to pull women.
That's largely name identification, but would you be comfortable with Tim Kaine?
Tim Kaine's not as good on the issues that I care about as Barack Obama is, and I hope that he will choose a running mate who's as strong on the issues as he is.
Thank you very much, Kim Gandy.
My pleasure.
Now, when you hear that term, strong on the issues, you have to ask what issues are they? They could be any number of things. She didn't specify, but one of those issues certainly is abortion. Have you ever wondered why it is that abortion has become, or the way that the pro-choicers would put it is, reproductive rights, has become the real issue for the women's movement in the United States, the women's vote in the United States? Now, I'm not talking about women who vote. I'm talking about the women's movement and really movement feminism. You ever wondered how it is that that could become the defining issue? Some have even said that for the feminist movement in the United States today, abortion has become the high, holy, sacred cow. Some have even called it a sacrament. Someone could be right on all the issues, but if they fall short of the requirements of organizations like the National Organization for Women on the issue of abortion, they just don't qualify. I think this reduces a woman to her womb, and I think that's a shame. A woman should not be reduced to her womb or her reproductive decisions or rights. We spoke recently with Father Richard John Newhouse, and he said something very poignant, very touching. He said how sad it is for the women's movement that they require, I think he said, a dagger to be driven into the most sacred, iconic places, the relationship between the mother and her child, the unborn child, for someone to qualify as an advocate, a strong advocate on the issues or of women's rights. Can someone be for the rights of women without being for unbridled abortion? The answer to that question is yes. In fact, the pro-choice movement has not done women any good. And I say that in an unqualified way. The pro-choice movement has not done women any good in the United States in 35 years of legalized abortion. Certainly hasn't done children any good.